He's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Last December, Canadian authorities arrested the CFO of Chinese tech giant Huawei, stemming from U.S. charges the company made deals with Iran. That, coupled with the persistent talk of the war for global 5G network supremacy, pitting the U.S. versus China, has made Huawei a media buzzword for nefarious Chinese spying.
At the heart of the allegations, that Huawei skirted U.S. sanctions on Iran doing business there through banks in the U.S. via a subsidiary called Skycom.
But the link isn't entirely unwarranted. In the last few years, the U.S. has charged Huawei with stealing trade secrets from T-Mobile, banned companies from using Huawei's networking equipment, and banned the sale of its phones to military bases.
The Chinese company is a global leader in telecoms equipment and one of the world's biggest smartphone makers. But the US Congress and others have warned that Beijing could use Huawei's equipment to spy on the world.
And for the record, Chinese state hackers have stolen everything from F-35 fighter jet plans to Benjamin Moore paint recipes.
Report tonight lifts the veil on a kind of invisible war, China unleashing its full spy power on American power grids and the wealth of American manufacturing.
So does the US really want Huawei 5G networks to proliferate? Or is the tech company being unfairly portrayed? Whatever your position, Vice News reporter William Turton just went to China on a Huawei media junket. Apparently, the company is trying to get Western reporters to see just how amazing and friendly the company actually is. What ensued was, as Turton will describe to us on this episode, super weird. I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. Well, thank you for coming, obviously.
Thanks for having me.
Always good to have more Vice people on the show, on the production. So you were just in China.
I was.
And what was that like? And what were you doing there?
It was really weird. That's like the main way to describe it. It was super weird. So I went to China because a few months ago, I saw someone tweet about an open letter that was posted in the Wall Street Journal, and I think maybe the Washington Post, from a senior official at Huawei, which is this Chinese telecommunications company. And the open letter was like, you know, hey, there's a lot of controversy around us right now, but we want to give people the facts. And U.S. media, you guys deserve to get the facts. So send us an email. We're going to give you the facts. And I was like,
I like facts.
That's literally my job. So I sent them an email, not knowing what would happen. And then the reply was like, okay, great. Come to China. I was like, okay, cool. That sounds crazy. So like, you know, we kind of went back and forth for a couple months. And then they were like, but it was extremely vague the whole time. And then this PR guy came to the office with like the head of U.S. government relations for Huawei. They like came and met with us here in, you know, a few feet away from where we're recording this. And they still didn't really tell us a lot. They're like, you'll come to China for a week and we'll show you stuff.
About Huawei.
About, yeah. And like, we're just going to, we're going to take you behind the curtain and give you the truth. And also, you'll be joined by 10 other journalists. And we're like, well, okay. You know, this could be pretty interesting. And the junket itself will be really weird. So it'll be a good story. And they're going to let us film stuff. Great. But I mean, in the lead up to the trip, we had no, like, I had to get a visa approved. I had to get a journalist visa approved, which is apparently extremely rare. And they weren't, like, they were not sending us this letter we needed from their headquarters or whatever to take to the consulate until 2 days before.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So I go and I, like, submit it and then kind of leave. And then, like, the night before my flight, I still didn't have my journalist visa. So I told Huawei, like, guys, I don't have the visa. Like, you waited until 2 days before. And they're like, oh, we'll work on it. So then, like, 30 minutes later, I get a call from the consulate. It's like, your visa's approved now. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I go and pick it up the morning of my flight. It was weird to me, this company that claims to have no allegiance or involvement to the Chinese government is able to quickly pull strings to get visas approved. So, yeah, that was a weird pretense to the trip.
And then you went. And was it what they had
promised you an amazing look behind the curtain?
No, it was not. So we started in well, God, there was a whole other thing, which I still don't understand why. And I think my guess is like for surveillance purposes, but they had us start in Hong Kong. And then once we were in Hong Kong, we're like, actually, we're going to start the trip in mainland China, in Shenzhen. So I just stayed randomly in Hong Kong one night for no reason. So we went to Shenzhen and then we had a meeting in the hotel lobby. The hotel was owned by Huawei. It was called the Amber Plaza. And it looked like a nice hotel, but it was owned by the company. And so we sit in the lobby.
Was there anybody in it?
Like, yeah, there were a lot of people in it. And it had its own little like village of like food and restaurants and stuff. And I mean, apparently it's like Huawei employees from around the world and like vendors and people that they bring to China stay there. So anyway, we sit in the lobby with the head PR guy, and he's like, so actually, when we told you there were 10 journalists coming from places like Forbes and Wired, what we actually meant is a guy from a telecom trade magazine and an Instagram influencer. And I was like,
oh, wow, it's like you flew all the way to China to hang out with an Instagram influencer, just what you
always wanted. This guy was really nice. I don't want to disparage him, but he didn't even have that many Instagram followers. It was like a extremely low tier Instagram influencer. So then I go and look at his Instagram page, and he did ads for Huawei. Like, he has received money for them. And then the telecom trade guy was doing branded content for Huawei. So we were the only actual journalists on this trip, which we found out only once we were in China.
Well, I mean, I watched the piece, and the one thing that kind of strikes me about it is that you definitely have this sort of, this like North Korean government junket, propagandistic feel to it. Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe not as obviously as extreme, but I mean, did you feel like it was something like that? Do you feel like you were being spied on during this junket?
Yeah. So I had a lot of surveillance anxiety going into this trip. I spoke with someone who was a reporter in China for like a decade, and she was telling me like, I mean, the words she used were North Korean, and I was like, oh, well, fuck. Am I allowed to say fuck on this podcast?
Fuck yeah.
Sorry. Cool. So I had a lot of surveillance anxiety, you know, especially because, you know, I know they were going to spy on journalists, fine, whatever, but I was also like going inside the company that would like assist in building the technology on spying on journalists, or like would have the capability, or like runs the networks there. So like I was going to be like double spied on. So yeah, I was having a lot of
surveillance anxiety. Did you bring a laptop with you?
You know, I brought a laptop, but never opened it. I brought a burner laptop, just never found a use for it. And I also brought a burner phone. When I went to the consulate in New York City, I didn't bring my phone either. And I assumed full compromise the whole time. This is actually not included in the piece, but in the lead up to me going, there was like the DHS found out about this somehow, and I got like, I kind of like set up this call, but they had already known about the trip somehow and were like very keen to know every detail of the trip.
What?
And then at the end of the call, we're like, yeah, and you're just like, assume that you will be on camera at all times, especially in your hotel room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, oh, well, I guess like I just, there's nothing I can do. Something I'm still trying to figure out, if there's any like surveillance head experts listening to this out there. We stayed in many hotels in many different cities. Every hotel room I had was always right next to the elevator.
Yeah.
Why? there's no way that's a coincidence. I feel like it's for surveillance reasons. One time I left the Huawei-owned hotel at like 4 a.m. I was really jet-lagged and I wanted to like go out and smoke a cigarette. I had a guy like follow me down the street and then follow me back into the hotel.
Well, one thing it could be is that they put you on certain floors that they would put people, they will surveil you. And they put you near the elevator, so that you wouldn't go down further into the actual floor, and see how there's nobody there.
Oh, that's, yeah. I mean,
and they also could have rooms like that are surrounded next to it that are also there in order to, that aren't actually rooms, they're fake doors.
Yes.
That are, it's maybe it's somewhere where they're actually literally like we're right now staring at a window where you can see.
Good God.
It could very well be that.
Right.
Yeah, that's one way of doing it. I've heard a lot of weird stuff. Like I've had that happen to me in Russia. But one thing they used to do in the Cold War was they used to go in and take a shit in your hotel room and just leave it there.
Like mind games?
As a, like, we can do whatever the fuck we want with you.
That's dope.
Yeah. Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of weird tricks, but I'm sure you were 100% being spot on. You might have even been honeypotted. I'm sure they probably tried to see what was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was weird because I was like, maybe, like, I'll get a glimpse of it in some way. Well, there actually was weird. Like, they took us to the state-owned telecom, China Mobile. China Mobile, crazy, has like 900 million subscribers, just almost three times more than the population of America. And they were showing us like 5G antennas on the roof. And there was this guy with like a huge DSLR just like taking pictures of me.
Oh, yeah, that's in the piece.
That's in the piece. And I'm like, this guy's taking pictures of me. I don't know who this man is. And then like a PR guy at the end, he's like, oh, he's just like from some communist newspaper. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, it was very weird.
Well, it is interesting that this is all happening surrounding sort of this, you know, if you listen to Trump, you listen to even other. I mean, to be honest with you, pundits on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
You know, this 5G, who's gonna win ultimate battle? I've seen it described as parallel to the nuclear race or parallel to the military industrial complex that we're trying to get countries to buy our stuff and not Russia's stuff. Now it's China, but now it's wires, it's the internet. Right. I mean, it's clear that like Huawei is also under attack.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's this like really fascinating dynamic going on in that, you know, 5G is supposedly this revolutionary technology. The internet speeds are 1,000 times faster. But no one else, as it stands, like in this current moment, really has the capacity to build a 5G network. There's Huawei in China, and then there's like Nokia and Ericsson in Europe, but they're like 12 to 18 months behind. So, you know, unless you really want to be super late to this, it seems like you might have to go with Huawei. And there are, you know, Western countries that are happy to do that, like Germany is proceeding, even though the U.S. intelligence agencies are telling Germany that we might share less intelligence with you, this extremely valuable, you know, intelligence, if you use Huawei products. But, you know, Germany doesn't seem to have a problem with it. There is a lot of, like, you know, really smart people who question the accusations that the U.S. government makes.
How does it make you feel when you hear the rhetoric from the U.S. government when they imply that Huawei technology has a backdoor in it and that Chinese surveillance agencies could use that technology to spy on people around the world?
Well, one argument that I've seen that I think this might be the most accurate, and I'd love to see what you think of this, is that the concept of them using those networks and spying on us, it likely won't be any easier or harder than it already is for them. Right. And to protect intelligence and protect your networks, do you really need Huawei or American cables to do this? Like, it probably doesn't matter either way. But the question is, does global influence matter more importantly than this sort of intelligence influence?
Right. I mean, that's certainly part of the question, because it's like, it will be a huge industry that will make a ton of money. I think there's also a concern of like a leverage point when your networks are manufactured by this Chinese company that, you know, clearly has some involvement with the government in some capacity. It gives them leverage in like negotiation, like a trade deal where they can, I don't know, delay a software update or a patch to your mobile networks or degrade them in some way. Or if you want to get like really apocalyptic, turn them off, you know, like.
Or like how Russia right now even will threaten Eastern Europe every once in a while that they'll shut off the natural gas taps.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just like any of the stuff that Russia has done to Ukraine over the past 5 years, but with our mobile networks. So, I mean, is there a backdoor embedded into every Huawei motherboard? It's like hard to say. Will it give them leverage if all of America's networks use their infrastructure and technology? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think that's a good breakdown. It's almost like they're using this siphoning of information backdoor argument as the more compelling argument against them, their networks proliferating.
I think it's the best that you can sell to the public.
Do you think?
Like, the Chinese are going to spy on you.
But how about the Chinese could stop you from engaging on the internet if something goes awry in our international
relationship?
I feel
like that's harder to sell to people. Like, you kind of sound like a crackpot when you say that. I mean,
true, even though it's true.
It's probably the more plausible argument of the two, but they're like when you can just, you know, and it helps your argument rhetorically when you don't have to really explain it, because you're like, listen, it's classified and like the Chinese are doing espionage and all this stuff is top secret. And listen, like we're telling you the best stuff we can here. There is
the
truly,
classic top secret argument.
There
too.
Is a lack of information from the U.S. government on this to back up their claims.
Oh,
like,
yeah. That's been
true.
The biggest thing. It's they keep saying that.
Right.
But the other thing, too, is that this has been going on for, you know, this isn't just this year. I mean, the U.S. government, along with most Five Eyes countries, have been sort of excluding Huawei from bidding on things like emergency service networks for years. And they've been doing the same things in briefings. I'm from Canada. I read briefings that the Conservative government had years ago saying, we cannot let Huawei get access to our networks because they will spy on us.
Yeah.
National security, top secret.
Right.
This is like not a new thing. It's almost, it's coming to a head, I think, really.
Yeah. And I mean, like China Mobile, the state-owned telecom, has been petitioning the FCC to enter U.S. markets for like 8 years now and just got denied very recently. So, I mean, this has been something that's been playing out for a long time and is now being amplified by the fact that the 5G networks are about to exist. And I think, you know, just relations between the U.S. and China.
But the really funny thing is that I think what we're describing is, especially given your trip to China, where you couldn't really get any answers from Huawei on anything.
Yeah.
And then oppositely, here in the U.S., from our government, they're doing the exact same thing. You know, they're saying beware of Chinese spying and not really providing any real evidence for that. So it's kind of a case of what's going on.
Right. Well, I mean, what are you saying, that the U.S. government does lots of surveillance as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean,
and they're not willing to actually disclose the surveillance that Huawei is or isn't doing on us.
Right.
Which I'm not, obviously, I agree they probably are, but they're not providing anything to substantiate that in a very public debate that is actually going to be very important going forward.
Yeah. So we've been like theorizing here a lot, but there was one thing that I found out for sure on my trip that
Let's
was just like shocking. We all know it to be true, but it was so shocking that they like fumbled this so hard and let us film it. It was kind of incredible. So there's this amazing dynamic on the trip. There were Chinese PR people who worked for Huawei and lived in China and worked in China, and American PR people. There was an American who lived in Hong Kong, one who lived in New York, and one who lived in San Francisco. And
was that the Chase fellow?
Chase, yeah. Chase is from San Francisco. And so one night, all the PR people go out to karaoke and get really drunk until 4 a.m. We did not go out. We were like resting and studying and being good. Next morning at breakfast, we find out that they're all super hungover, which is like amazing. And so
great time to ask a question.
Yeah. And so like no one really knows what's happening on that day of the tour. We're like eating breakfast and I'm just kind of like, what's going on? And no one really knows what we're doing that morning. And eventually a Chinese PR person is like, let's go to a Huawei store in a mall. It's like 20 minutes down the road. It'll be fine. And the American PR people are like, great, we've never been to one. Let's go. So we walk in and the cameras are rolling and it is an exact replica of an Apple store. It is not inspired by or influenced or similar to. It is literally an exact replica down to the wood grain on the tables, the badges that the employees were wearing, the way the products were aligned. And I was like, oh my God, I just interviewed a senior official at the company yesterday who told me that the company does not steal intellectual property. And we're standing in this like church of stolen intellectual property. And so
I saw the video and you were very frustrated. You are completely right.
Chase, does this place remind you of an Apple store at all?
Apple, Microsoft, Samsung, I'm pretty sure everyone has very similar concepts in terms of the stores.
No, they're not. No. They're not exactly the same, with the same chairs and employees wearing the same badges. There are some fundamental differences in those stores.
And the mic, interesting.
Yes.
I would disagree.
I was like, how stupid do you think we are? Like, you're being very rude to me by bringing me here with a straight face. I am not appreciating this.
But the American handler says that to you.
Right.
He actually goes, well, I disagree. And you're like,
well, there's an amazing moment where the American handler, Chase, the PR guy, is like, it's similar to a Samsung store, a Microsoft store. But, what really differentiates us here is the products. And I go, oh, the products. Interesting. And I turn to my right, and there's an exact AirPods knockoff. Just a Huawei. And I, held it up. And I was like, oh, you put these in your ears, and it's like they float on air. And he just, walked away after. he was not my friend with me after that. In the trip. We did not have any more casual conversations.
Well, he was wearing shades inside the store, actually, in the piece, and I did clock that. But now that I know
the backstory. This is the exclusive podcast backstory, as you'll know.
Yeah.
These PR people. There was that PR guy. We had a WeChat group of just the PR people and us for coordination. At 3 in the morning, he sent a message to that WeChat group that just said, help.
No.
Yes.
It just said help?
Yeah, it literally just said help. and the next morning we had to be like, so what happened last night?
And what did happen?
They went out to karaoke.
There just was one less PR person there.
I mean, he was there. It was just, he sent us help. So, that was a whole other just layer of weirdness to me. It's just this bumbling operation of trying to convince us. And it was just falling apart at the seams every minute. No one knew what was happening or why we were going or why we were there.
I mean, and this is also that theft of intellectual property is also very common. That the Chinese government has sort of said this isn't true, it never happens. And you bring out the J-20 fighter, for example.
Right.
It looks exactly like the F-35. They're like, yeah, we made the same thing, man.
Right.
No big deal.
Yeah. When Chinese spies were inside Lockheed Martin networks.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there was another thing that I'm actually not sure about, but I don't want to strongly make this allegation. But they took us to an R&D facility, or it was R&D. It was testing their smartphones, and they showed us a video. And at one point, the video showed kind of this mechanical arm touching a screen a bunch of times to kind of test, that the screen works after you press it a million times.
Right.
And I wasn't sure if this is the exact same product, but one of the things that Huawei is alleged to have stolen is this thing called Tappy from T-Mobile, which is a device that tests the screen by pressing it a lot of times. And I was like, is that
Tappy?
Is that Tappy? And they were like, you are not authorized to ask this question. I was like, what are you talking about? But this was by the end of the trip, and I was just like, okay, whatever. We weren't even allowed to film in there, so I was like, okay, mental note. They showed us this thing that they might have stolen.
I gotta say, your frustration really, in the piece, you can see this steady decline of your just
of me
your
literally
tolerance
losing
of
my
this.
Mind. Here's the thing. Here's the weird part about it is it went down. It was down, down, down. I was miserable. I wanted to go home so bad, but then it went up at the end because we went to Shanghai, and I didn't know this, but we were staying at the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh my God!
Which was like. They brought it, they brought us there, and they would have paid for it. If we had let them, they would have paid for these very fancy hotel rooms, and they did pay for it for everyone else who was on the junket. Those, the telecom trade mags and the Instagram influencer guy, they had all their food and lodging paid for. I mean, we paid for it because of ethics and standards, but just being there in this room that I could never hope to afford. On this trip that taught me literally nothing was so insane and hilarious. So that, I mean, that's why there's a scene where I'm laying in the bathtub in
that
the Ritz-Carlton
really
Road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and everything is just surrounded by gold. So, you know, at the end, I was like, maybe Huawei is okay, and maybe we should trust them.
But that's when you've lost your mind.
That is true. You know? I had fully lost it.
Yeah, you're just like, I'm sick of eating the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. I watched the unedited footage of that scene in Me in the Bathtub the other day, and I was like, I forgot about this, but I was literally crying because I was like, what is going on? This makes no sense. I was like disassociating.
How long were you there for?
Just a week.
That was long enough, though.
Totally. I mean, they could have really showed us all the important things in a couple days. I think they... I mean, once we were at the Ritz-Carlton, it became clear to me that, like, they're really trying to win us over on just, like, the lavish gifts part. I mean, we didn't accept any gifts, but I mean, if I could see, like, you know, I was talking to this telecom trade mag guy. He's like, you know, you go in these companies' junkets and they're always really nice. And I'm like, oh, well, you get to go on this like sweet trip to China for a week and they pay for all of it. And if you write something nice, I'm sure they'll invite you on the next one.
Weird.
Yeah. I mean, this is true of like all PR, though.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world. Yeah. But it was just so bizarre to see it.
I mean, well, especially with something that powerful of an entity, right? Huawei's not exactly just like some weird app where they're like, fucking use our app and write an amazing review. It's one of the most powerful countries in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and it also has serious links to the Chinese government.
Right. That was another part of it is when I interviewed this senior official, the third ranking official in the company, the person everyone referred to as Madam Chen. She's like the head of communications. I asked her with my amazing and fearless producer, Karen Yi, on this story, had me ask her what her involvement in the Communist Party was. And so I asked her. And she said, no, you know, I'm not in the Communist Party. And then I said, well, do you know anyone in the Communist Party in your company? She's like, well, I've never thought to ask. But the president and founder of the company, Ren Zhengfei, is known and openly associated with the Communist Party.
Yeah.
It's like publicly known information.
And his daughter's in jail in Canada right now. Or in...
Yeah.
In
yeah.
Canada, not waiting, in jail.
Awaiting
trial.
Extradition.
And extradition.
Who is the CFO of the company. Now, she, I mean, this is like, there's so many threads to this. She is there for allegedly orchestrating a scheme for Huawei to help Iran subvert U.S. sanctions. So there's like 5G, there's like...
But it's all part of the same chess match.
Precisely. Yeah.
I mean, it's... And what was really interesting is, I'm sure you're on these lists as well, but right around 5G, when Trump really started tweeting about it in the summer, and then right after that, when Meng was arrested in Canada.
Yeah.
My, like, Huawei press release, they just started inundating me, like, 3 or 4 a day.
Yeah, yeah. They're a really aggressive
And every time
push.
Something flares up, it would just, like, I'd get a crazy bunch of emails.
Do you notice on Huawei. Twitter that you're getting, like, Huawei-targeted ads?
Yes.
I don't know if that's because I, like, research the company all day long, but it's, like, all I see on Twitter now is just, like, get the Huawei facts as a new tweet. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're being really aggressive, and, like, bringing U.S. media to China is part of this plan to get their message out. We didn't get an interview with Ren, but other folks have, which is, like, really rare and unprecedented. He doesn't normally do interviews. He did one with, like, CBS. So, like, they're playing, I mean, part of their strategy is, like, this U.S. media push, and inviting us there was part of that.
Well, I'm glad you came home with a cool story.
Yeah.
And you came on the podcast to talk about it. We didn't even get into the food that you ate, but...
It was pretty good. I like Chinese food.
I mean, it's known to be pretty amazing. Well, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This week's episode was recorded by William Flynn, produced by Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchirai, hosted by me, and edited by Sophie Cases. You will hear from us next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.